Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Here we are, August 14th, 2016. You're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Emerald Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, James Bell, the lead boxing analyst for the Cohort Truth On Sports website at thectonsports.com and also a key contributor in other stories on the Cohort Truth On Sports website. Be looking for a couple of articles and previews in the next couple of days in other sports as well in reference to that. But today we will be talking about different news and notes in the boxing world. Listening on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio, which you could also dial in to Talk Boxing at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Be able to talk on the show after pressing one key to get on cue. We're going to be going through a couple of commercials here, and then we're going to get right into it on the Boxing Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Network on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting powered by blogtalkradio.com.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston
Matt Ryan and Cam Newton is, Jameis Winston who has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestone Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Live on the Munch and Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. Pretty much getting into it here. What we got going on here in the sport of boxing, we really didn't have that much going on in the professional circuit over the course of the weekend as far as live fights are concerned. But we have a few things here and there that we will be talking about, as we did have a lot of news going down in the sport of boxing over the course of this week. What I'm going to do is we are getting into that in a little bit. We have kind of a notable fight coming up here that'll actually be next Sunday. As we have a IBF Eliminator fight coming up with this will be in Brooklyn, as we'll have Errol Spence Jr. going up against Leonard Boundou in an IBF Eliminator fight. Of course, you know, Errol Spence Jr. is, you know, an undefeated guy there in the welterweight division, technically is the top-ranked guy for the IBF welterweight championship. Earlier this year, the defending IBF champion, Kell Brook, defended it against Kevin Bisier, who was number one guy. And, of course, Kell Brook scored the knockout victory, so Bisier is no longer being a number one contender, and right now it is vacant. So we have, you know, the highest ranked contender there, Errol Spence Jr., going against the number six rated guy, and Leonard Boundou. And of course, for those that, you know, follow the sport, Leonard Boundou was at one point the WBA regular welterweight champion. Pretty much not the WBA regular welterweight champion. He was the interim WBA welterweight champion up until one point. Actually, he went up against Keith Thurman in 2014, he was the European welterweight champion, and then fought for the interim WBA world welterweight title in December 2014 against Keith Thurman, where he suffered his first loss of his career. And so he's going to go up against Errol Spence Jr. with, you know, just one loss on his record to Keith Thurman. Of course, people are looking at this fight to see how Errol Spence Jr. performs against Leonard Boundou in comparison to what Keith Thurman did back in 2014. This will be at the Ford Amphitheater in Coney Island, New York, next Sunday. And I think it's pretty much just another fight for Errol Spence to kind of like showcase his skills, just like he did against, you know, Chris Algieri in April of 2016, where he took him out with a TKO victory. Errol Spence is basically going through a string of multiple TKO victories. I said he did that against Algieri, against Alejandro Pereira, Chris Van Heeren, Philo Greco, Samuel Vargas, and also Francisco Javier Castro. So he's been very active, recently. Last year, I mean, Errol Spence basically had four fights, actually, in 2015. And had this one fight here against Chris Algieri here in 2016. So ever since April 11, 2015, he's had six fights on his belt. So he's, you know, continuing to stay active here to go up against Leonard Boundou for that number two or maybe the number one spot that is basically vacated there in the IBF welterweight rankings. That is pretty much the only notable fight there in that particular fight card that's been put up by DiBella and Felipe Gomez. This will be on, Premier Boxing Champions banner should be shown on NBC here. They have another notable fight there in the women's ranks as undefeated Heather Hardy will be going up against Shelly Vincent for the WBC International female featherweight title. We'll have two fairly highly ranked female contenders going up against each other that may end up being the co-feature for Errol Spence versus Leonard Boundou. So be on the lookout for that there on Premier Boxing Champions. What I may do is see if I could look into this telecast that they're going to have on the 21st and see if they'll have that as a co-feature. Right now, it's just showing that as the feature fight. Not necessarily sure if they're going to have a co-feature being shown on NBC on Sunday. It'll be Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock at the Ford Amphitheater at Coney Island Boardwalk in Brooklyn. So be sure to catch Errol Spence Jr. in action. See him as one of the feature welterweights that are out there. So be sure to catch that. Number to dial in here is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press 1-2 to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Although there wasn't really any high-profile fights going on in the sport of boxing over the course of this weekend, we did have a couple of notable fighters actually fight over the weekend. One of them was Antonio Margarito. Of course, we know Margarito as the guy that basically was caught using loaded rats before his fight, his welterweight title fight against Shane Mosley. And, you know, once he was caught using those loaded wraps, he was, you know, not only, you know, basically beat by, you know, Shane Mosley, he was pretty much out of, you know, out of action for a year after that. And then after, you know, a couple of fights here and there against Manny Pacquiao, Miguel Cotto, he was, you know, out of boxing for 5 years. And he came back in March of this year against Jorge Pires Jr. And then again, you know, last night he went up against Ramon Alvarez, and he was able to score a knockdown against Ramon Alvarez, leading to a 10-round split decision there. For those that kind of seeing that last name there, yes, Ramon Alvarez is the older brother of Canelo Alvarez, and the scores that were in there for this fight were 95-94 for Ramon Alvarez, and two scorecards for Antonio Margarito at 97-92, which is kind of, which is like completely different than the 95-94 score that was given to Ramon Alvarez. And so Antonio Margarito moves to 40 wins and 8 losses, while Ramon Alvarez goes down to 23-5-2. Just seeing here, I mean, this is, you know, another fight that is, you know, done in Mexico. So just seeing here, I don't necessarily know if Antonio Margarito is going to be able to return to the ring in the States anytime soon. So that'll be something to look out for. I mean, I've seen, you know, things being name drops that say that Antonio Margarito may have a distant outside shot to fighting Canelo Alvarez after Canelo's fight versus Liam Smith, which I hope that really does not happen. But we have those, you know, we have Margarito there moving on to getting the win. The other notable fighter that fought over the course of the weekend was Roy Jones Jr., and Roy Jones Jr. had that basic exhibition fight. How would I say exhibition fight? As he won the lopsided 10-round decision over Rodney Moore, getting a shutout win. But however, he ended up injuring his right bicep over the course of the fight. So that's something that I kind of dropped that came through on our boxing scene a few hours ago. We do have a caller in here live, area code 205. What's going on with you?
What's going on, James? This is Mike Grady, man.
Hey, Mike. You know, just going through news and notes over the sport of boxing here, as we only had those two notable fighters fighting over this weekend. Nothing, you know, no high-profile fights on Saturday. So, I mean, it just had Antonio Margarito in the fight, and like I was saying there, Roy Jones Jr. in the fight. So I was just going over those and a preview to Errol Spence Jr. versus Lennon Bundu. That's going to be on NBC next Sunday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't watch the Roy Jones fight, but I saw, like, highlights, and I saw that he hurt his right elbow, was it? What was it?
His right bicep.
Bicep, oh, okay. Yeah, so I saw the article saying that he may be done, or he said that he's going to see how long it takes, and he'll decide whether or not he'll be done or not.
Yeah.
But I think he's old, but against the right person, he could probably win another belt. It's probably time for him to put it up, but against the right person, he could win. You know, he is not going to fight any young Thundercat and, you know, expect to win. But the right, you know, opponent, he can beat him.
Well, I mean, my question to that is, what would be the what would be considered as the right opponent for him? You know,
like a weak
opponent.
I
got to figure out, like, where, you know, what weight class he would be at. You know, where he would, you know, end up fighting, who he would end up fighting against, you know. So that's my thing. I mean, I can't figure out who he would be going up against in that case. I mean,
yeah,
right now,
heavyweight or light heavy?
This thing here may be saying cruiserweight. I'm checking here. Yeah, they said it was like cruiserweight.
Okay.
Where his last fight was, and you know, I don't, you know, I don't know what the, yeah, because his last couple of fights have been in cruiserweight, and that fight against Enzo Macedonelli, that was a cruiserweight fight, so he's in there at cruiserweight for a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, cruiserweight is, you know, kind of the, I don't see, like, who would be a guy that he would go up against. I mean, maybe Babu Shuminov for the WBA regular belt, because Lebedev, he can't beat, Golovkin, he can't beat, and Tony Bellew, he probably wouldn't be able to beat. And the other thing is, he has to get himself into the rankings for, you know, each of these organizations, and he's not in any of them, so.
Yeah.
What did you say, that?
I said, I wonder how much money he gets for these fights, because I'm sure he at least make, you know, a little change.
I mean, you maybe, you know, make it a little change here and there. I don't know what he got for, you know, this particular fight, because, you know, it's, you know, basically they're the base and our physical effort, and, you know, you can only get, like, about 5,000 plus in there, so. So I don't know how much could be, you know, earned off of that, you know, but in the meantime, he could, you know, get, you know, some type of fight where he'd be able to earn some money. But to me, I think he should just, you know, take it easy and, you know, still get those checks from being a commentator on HBO Sports.
Yeah. And he was training, too, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and he was like a chief second for, he was a chief second for, you know, Jean Pascal. So, I don't know if he's going to be doing more as far as, like, training fighters, but he should, you know, really look into that. The only thing is like, a lot of times his fire gets in the way. So, he could be training, but it almost seems like he has more interest in fighting than training.
Yeah. I mean, when the fire's still burning, what can you do? You need something to smother it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the thing with him is just that, you know, he just, you know, it feels like he doesn't want to give up, you know, he didn't want to give up his career. But now, just seeing here what happens after he gets his right bicep evaluated, if he's out for an extended period of time, it pretty much makes, you know, not that much sense for him to, you know, get back into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep, yep. And, yeah, the other thing I was, you know, going over was the thing with the Antonio Margarito in his second fight back after a five-year absence from the ring, going up against the older brother of Saul Canelo Alvarez. I'm not sure, like, where they televised that, but he, you know, he got a score to knock down and got a majority decision victory with 297-92 scorecards and one that was a 95-94 for Alvarez.
Okay, I see both Alvarez brothers always had that one judge, huh?
Yeah, it always seems like that. They always have that one judge out there. I mean, even like here in Mexico where, you know, you have Margarito, you know, also is from Mexico himself. Well, I mean, he resides in Mexico, but was from California. But, yeah, it seems like Alvarez, those Alvarez guys, you know, have somebody that always rolls with them no matter what. So, that might be a key thing here if Canelo Alvarez struggles against Liam Smith in the upcoming fight September 17th.
Yeah. Well, did Margarito at least, because I remember him, you know, being a pressure fighter for the most part of the majority of the bout. Was his stamina at least still up there?
Might have been. I didn't really, I wasn't really able to catch the fight.
Okay.
I'm trying to see if I could, I was seeing if I could get the numbers on it, but I didn't get the punch output numbers that Margarito had in this particular fight. But it seems like, you know, Margarito still has a few things to work on, though. Because he was getting, you know, caught a good amount of times here. But he was able to respond and, you know, get that knockdown in the eighth round. And then, you know, still just finish it out in 10 rounds to score the split decision victory. Just seeing here, we got like another caller calling in here, 813. What's going on there with you?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. Just checking in.
Hey there, brother Terrell. Yeah, we were just getting into a little bit of things here and there, news about what happened in the previous week with Antonio Margarito fighting and also Alberto Jr. fighting him. It was like I was saying, in a discussion board on Facebook, it might as well be time for Jones to let it go since he suffered a right bicep injury that may be pending surgery. I know it will be evaluated on Monday, but if it requires surgery, then he might as well just, you know, give it up.
Yeah, with the Roy Jones fight, like I say, with the injury he suffered, but how many times before have you seen a fighter suffer an injury at the same time they're forced to not go out on their own terms? If he's retired, this would not be on his terms. So with that said, obviously I expect to see him back in the ring despite his injury. It's sad, but that's what I expect. Like I said, because he's not going out on his own terms, so we should see. And he says a bicep injury, that's typically a 3 to 4 month recovery on that if there's surgery needed for that. Then, of course, you got rehab after that, which basically puts him on the shelf for the rest of his year. But once again, you're not going out on your own terms. And obviously, we know at this point, Roy Jones Jr. has aspirations to keep on fighting, you know, because even for like this, what if he didn't get injured? He still is going to fight. So this is just to put him on the shelf for the rest of the year. And unfortunately, like I said, we expect him back in the ring. So we should see how that develops, you know.
Yeah. The effect that he wouldn't be going out on his own terms would bother him a lot. And so he, you know, after he gets that evaluation, sees how long he's going to be out, he's probably going to, you know, try to get back onto the scene again, which is unfortunate because, I mean, pretty much every one of us knows that it's basically over for him, but apparently he doesn't know. So he would have to, you know, figure out one way or another when it's going to be, when he has to call it quits for real.
Another thing, too, when you spoke about the Margarito fight, we know he won. I think he won on two judge scorecards, and the third scorecard went to Alvarez and everything. My main question about this, well, for one, he won the fight, okay? But after the fight, now he's calling out Canelo Alvarez. There's no way in hell that Canelo Alvarez is going to fight him, not because he's scared of him, but when you're at the top of the sport, obviously, like we always talk about, boxing is the business. So with that said, what financial boom would Canelo get for fighting Margarito? And there's none. And matter of fact, if they did fight, I think he would be criticized more for fighting Margarito than he would been for fighting Khan. You know, even though I know it's a different situation. I mean, the only motivation I see for him fighting Margarito would be, quote unquote, revenge for his brother, or even just a Mexican rivalry like that. But there's no way in the world he's going to fight Margarito. We don't need that fight. And right. I'm not saying Margarito's up for a paycheck, but Margarito definitely made good money from his time in 147 and stuff like that, fights with Sugar Shane and on Cotto and everything. He made great money. And I don't know his business side, but he seems savvy enough to kind of save his money and everything and not blow through it. But like I said, I don't necessarily know that personally, but he seems savvy enough to hold on to his money. So I think this guy's just simply fighting to become relevant again. And it begs the question, what makes you maintain that side? I mean, we're looking at the same thing with Roy Jones Jr., Hopkins. Why do you want to stay relevant for so long in the sport, when you've had your time, you've been at the top levels of the sport and exhibited that, you know? I mean, although Margarito was tainted, of course, you know, with his hand wrapping scandal and stuff like that, but what makes these guys stay? Why? Why? I mean, what goes to their mind? Is it the boxer himself? Is there a team behind them? Are they trying to provide for their family financially? What is it? And I know the reason is definitely fair, but love to hear your take on it.
Well, I mean, to me, I don't think that fight between Antonio Margarito and Saul Canelo Alvarez would be able to take place unless it's in Mexico. I don't think that any United States boxing organization would sanction Antonio Margarito to fight anywhere in the U.S. again. So I feel that... you know, if that happened, it would be a really shocking news story if that happened pretty much near the end of this year. And you know, if they were able to you know, make that happen, because for you know Alvarez to you know, to even fight Antonio Margarito, Margarito would probably have to be in the rankings for the WBO. If Alvarez defeats Liam Smith for the WBO super welterweight belt. So, it would have to be a voluntary defense, number one, and number two, it would have to be in Mexico in order for that to happen.
Yeah, like I said, just what I said, and what would have to transpire for Margarito to get within those rankings? I mean, he would have to be some notable fighters at this point to get ranked, and in order to justify that. And you know, you already know at this juncture, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So that's like saying Margarito's going to beat somebody, two people in the top 10, to justify that fight. So that's just simply not going to happen. I mean, how many times we've seen before where someone gets a win per se, and then next thing you know, they're calling out people. I mean, we've seen that time and time again, where people in 147 called out Mayweather after getting a win. We've seen it from Thurman and so many other people. We want Mayweather. We want Mayweather. You know, so like I say, it's just a simple call out, trying to make noise for himself. I understand that because he wants to be relevant. But like I said, it just bewilders me on how these guys just. Have these long careers, get out of the game for whatever reason, and then want to get back into the game. Once again, i.e. Sugar Shane Mosley. I mean, Sugar Shane Mosley was hailed as one of the greatest fighters of this generation in the last 20 years and stuff like that. You know, like I said, been at the top, been in wars, made all kind of money, got a son in boxing, all kind of stuff he's done. You know,
yeah.
Got out of the game, and once again, got drew back into it. And like, so, and we know that he definitely took care of his money, you know, despite the stuff that he went on with his divorce and things like that. He definitely took care of his money. But once again, why are you drawn back into boxing? I mean, it's just that machismo that's built in, that you want to compete, you want to see your name out there. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I made a comment earlier, you know, about when the fire burning, you know, there has to be some event to extinguish that fire. And maybe they haven't had that event yet.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much, you know, agree with what you were saying there, Terrell. So, yeah, I think that. You know, we'll have to see what happens or what transpires in reference to all of that. But, I mean, to me, I just don't feel like, you know, they will, any sanctioning body will allow Antonio Margarito to fight anywhere outside of Mexico. He's probably just still going to be, you know, wrecking up fights left and right in Mexico until, you know, somebody out there gives him a chance to fight elsewhere, like in England or, I don't know, England, Ireland, or some weird, you know, some weird site for a boxing match. Just real quick here, number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. That's 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk here on the Boxing Source Radio Show. All right, pretty much getting into other news over the course of the week here. On Tuesday, there was a press conference held in Las Vegas with Kathy Duva and also Sergey Kovalev. They were supposedly having a formal announcement of the fight between Sergey Kovalev and Andre Ward in L.A. Live. But it seemed like there that they didn't necessarily agree to all of the terms, and also Andre Ward didn't show up for this formal announcement of the fight between those two. It seems like Kathy Duva is like stating that, you know, Andre Ward and Roc Nation Sports are kind of showing their reluctance in having to fight. But to me, what this is looking like is that, you know, they're trying to, you know, pull off the setup that, you know, Andre Ward's looking like the bad guy or the bad guy in reference to business in this case. When, I mean, it's a press conference that's held on Tuesday, a few days after, you know, Andre Ward had his fight against Alexander Brand. So, you know, for Kathy Duva to kind of like pull this off, kind of like seems like something that she would do as, you know, she's basically been the, she was basically the roadblock between Sergey Kovalev and Adonis Stevenson fighting each other over in 2015. So, I mean, I don't think anything here is really going to happen that would endanger the fight between Sergey Kovalev and Andre Ward. I just feel like, you know, Kathy Duva's, you know, trying to make it out to be like Andre Ward is a, you know, a bad businessman when it comes to the sport of boxing. Wanted to get y'all's input on that.
I think it's, you know, as there was a video, I guess that, who was Dante's Boxing Nation? He said that, you know, this is something that a lot of people or enough people do to the black boxer where you try to villainize them. And to an extent, I definitely see where you're coming from. You know, people, they don't need very much of a reason to villainize the black boxer for things that they do well or don't do well, and, you know, to turn it into a negative. I think this is just a place for them to get the crowd behind Kovalev and to make, you know, Ward not be the crowd favorite per se. Is it right? No.
Yeah,
it's not right. But I mean, it's something that happens, and I mean, it is what it is. People villainize the black boxer. Andre Ward gonna hopefully win and you know, and nullify that. So
true. What you got to say on the trail?
Yeah, even in that same rhetoric, we've kind of heard some of this narrative from people like Hopkins, Mayweather, where they inserted the race factor in the boxing. And, like, me personally, like, one thing I believe, a big network like HBO, they sit in a little ballroom, and they basically put a fighter up on the board and project a career path for him, you know, for that fighter. How good could he be? How great could he be? What do we have to do? Where's he from? I mean, they take everything into account. Where's he from? What's his style? I mean, just simply take a quick look at Ringendahl. Great fighter, great amateur background, but simply because of his style, he's on the network for one or two fights, and after that, got blackballed. You know, look at how they embraced Ward. Yeah, not Ward, but Gaddy. After he's had his relevance on ESPN and stuff like that and everything, they embraced him. Baltimore and HBO and Italian-American, good-looking, whatever you want to call it. I don't really – whatever. I mean, you know what I'm saying. But Baltimore to the network,
mm-hmm.
and put him in front of – I'm not sure if he had a fight with Mayweather, a fight on HBO before the Mayweather fight, but presented him to Mayweather, and we know Mayweather chopped him up, cut him right on down and everything. And – once again, there were other fighters, too, that they could have featured and nurtured, you know. But, and like I said, some of the Reddit this week was talking about how Ward would possibly get jobbed if it goes, like, for a full 12 rounds with Kovalev and everything. And like I said, me personally, I think that Ward could have simply dispel that simply by flat out beating him. I mean, I don't expect a knockout. I don't. But does HBO and people like that get behind certain fighters of certain color? Yeah, you can definitely make an argument. Like I said, people like Mayweather and Hopkins have been saying that for years about boxing is racist and things like that. You know, but like, all in all, like I said, I hope that for the Ward-Kovalev fight, Ward just makes it, he takes it out of the judges' hands. That's
mm-hmm.
I hope the type of performance I hope he turns in. So it's not even a question at all. You know, but
yeah.
That's
Yeah, I mean, I hope that, you know, Andre Ward is, you know, able to, you know, make it so that he's clearly the better fighter in that fight against Sergey Kovalev, because I feel that HBO really wants Sergey Kovalev to win that particular fight. And to me, it kind of like is on two, pretty much for two reasons. Number one is that if Ward wins, the only real fight that he would have at light heavyweight is a rematch against Sergey Kovalev. And then number two is that, and this is something that I recently found out, is that when Andre Ward signed to basically fight Sergey Kovalev, he was basically on a three-fight deal with HBO. So this fight here between Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev is the last fight that Andre Ward contractually has against HBO. And so if Andre Ward is able to defeat Sergey Kovalev and then all of a sudden say, you know, tell Rock Nation Sports, hey, we don't necessarily need to be fighting on HBO anymore. Let's see, you know, have our fights be shown on Showtime, and, you know, kind of give the Showtime sports director a call and say, hey, we want to have our fights on Showtime from now on. There wouldn't be nothing that HBO could do to stop that. So he would be taking all of those light heavyweight titles over to Showtime to be fighting. And I don't think HBO would want to be a fan of that either.
So you said HBO does not have any options on Ward after this fight?
Oh, what? I didn't get that clearly. Could you say that one more time?
Yeah, so you're saying that HBO does not have any options on Ward after the Kovalev fight?
Correct.
Okay.
They had a three-fight deal. They had a three-fight deal between, you know, Ward and HBO, and, you know, the fight against Barrera's fight one, and then here against Alexander Brand is fight two, and now Kovalev is fight number three. All right, Mike, you had something to say on it?
Yeah, I was just, adding in some supplemental stuff to what Terrell was saying, like, about villainizing, Mayweather and stuff. I really didn't like how during the whole production of the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, it was, like, good versus evil. And that was just an overt attempt to villainize. And, like, I had to check a few people, like this BS, you know, like how is Mayweather going to get labeled as evil, you know, like, and then I had casual boxing fans coming and saying stuff like, he's not good, he's, you know, and I'm like, just because, you know, this production says he's evil, that shouldn't mean that you should believe that, you know, because I'm sure just because he's human and has, you know, things going wrong with him, Pacquiao has just as much stuff going wrong with him as well, too. So I'm pretty much agreeing with Terrell in that they do make an overt effort to villainize black fighters.
Yeah. HBO has basically done that, you know, over the course of, you know, multiple years. I mean, this is just, you know, not only been with Floyd Mayweather, it's been with, you know, Shane Mosley and guys like Vernon Forrest and Winky Wright and, you know, goes on and on. I mean, here's an example here in reference to, like, Manny Pacquiao. They would boost Manny Pacquiao on HBO. But, years ago, he was supposed to have a rematch. There was a rematch scheduled between him and Eric Morales. And before that fight took place, Eric Morales fought a guy named Zahir Rahim. And Rahim was
basically what they quote unquote call the typical black fighter, not a fighter that, you know, comes from, you know, other countries like, you know, Africa or, you know, Cuba or Colombia or something like that, but, you know, a guy that has like a slick style, unorthodox, kind of like defensive oriented, makes you miss a lot and frustrates you. So a fighter like an Eric Morales, it would look like a bad fight, but Morales ended up losing to Zahir Rahim. But did Zahir Rahim end up fighting Manny Pacquiao? No. They ended up going forward with that Pacquiao-Morales fight because Bob Arum saw it as more of a attractive fight to put in Pacquiao and Morales than Pacquiao and Zahir Rahim. So he's kind of like had that type of mentality over the course of 15 years plus, and HBO was basically bought into that.
Yeah, I definitely remember that Zahir Rahim Morales fight. Zahir was a good fighter. He's a good fighter. And a lot of times when you watch an HBO fight, you already know from the narrative on who they want to win the fight. And then sometimes, bam, the opponent that they want to lose comes out and puts in a performance and wins the fight unexpectedly to them. You know, that's it. Rahim was definitely a good fighter. I remember that fight from a while back.
You just saying, hey, Mike, you got something to add to it before we go to the next topic?
Not really.
All right. Gotcha. Like, if there's like anything else in reference to that, you could go on to YouTube and, you know, just search for like HBO and Black Fighters, and you'll see a good couple of videos on, you know, people talking about how, you know, HBO and guys like Bob Arum don't favor black fighters. And now they're basically going through that same thing again with Terrence Crawford. So we're going to be looking into that and seeing if that's going to be the same old story. Just here with this last topic here before we go into overtime, if y'all wanted to listen in during overtime, call in at 347-237-5539 to listen in. All right. Now, over the course of the past couple of days, there's been a lot of talk on many social media forums about what's, you know, going on between Deontay Wilder and Alexander Povetkin. Of course, a lot of people know about the fight that was scheduled to happen on May 21st between those two for the WBC Heavyweight Championship. But, you know, over the course of April, was found that Alexander Povetkin had traces of meldonium in his system. And so what happened was the WBC ruled to had the fight postponed until we found out more about it. And, you know, Wilder and his team, who was, you know, already, I think it was like in England training for the fight, was kind of upset about what was going on. And he ended up flying back to the States, and the fight never materialized and happened. So Wilder moved on and went on to fight Chris Arreola for a voluntary defense back in July. Now, you know, things are, like, floating up in reference to, you know, the anti-doping agency that that was testing here, and that they really haven't said much about what they're doing with Alexander Povetkin, and also the WBC hasn't made a ruling in reference to the status of Povetkin's number one contendership. And to me, what that's inclining is that they may not do anything to Alexander Povetkin, because there are also like multiple articles in April coming from the anti-doping agency that says that
they had a probationary period in reference to how much meldonium could be in one system that they would be able to allow for them to continue to compete. So, and this wasn't like something that is just for, you know, Alexander Povetkin. This is for any type of athletics. I mean, that the other, well, the more notable person that was caught using or caught with meldonium in a, in their system is Maria Sharapova. And so that is where, you know, basically all of this kind of like started was with Maria Sharapova, and it also carried over to a bunch of, you know, Olympic athletes in Russia that, you know, kind of was held suspended, but a good portion of them were able to be reinstated in order to compete in the Olympic Games. But in this case here with Alexander Povetkin, when he was tested for the presence of meldonium, he had, I think it was 70 nanograms per milliliter that was found. And the allowable limit, or you had to fall under 1 microgram per milliliter. If you're over 1 microgram per milliliter, then that's when the anti-doping agency would come after you. And so I think that is what a lot of boxing fans are kind of like stuck on, is that they didn't know, or they're not necessarily grasping that when Povetkin had been, you know, seen as meldonium was found in his system, it was a very minuscule amount. And so with that, I don't feel like he's going to be you know, disciplined by the WBC, and I think he's going to keep that number one contendership. I'm gonna start with Sorrell first on this. What do you think about it?
Well, I was glad because I didn't have full knowledge of the amounts that Povetkin had in the system, and I mean, this is kind of tough because like when you hear like the amounts, like you said, the milliliters, whatever the measures were, they seem minuscule. That's what they seem. But at the same time, when you got a bigger story behind that about a Russian state-sponsored doping program, you're like, oh, hold on. That means that confirms there's a culture of doping in Russia, and it's state-sponsored. So, I mean, that, like I said, that of course we know that standard too, their Olympic program, but we know too that how many times before have we seen a boxer carry the pride of a nation? Look at Pacquiao. He carries, small as the Philippines is, he carries the pride of that nation. So with that said, a high-profile athlete like the Klitschko's, for example, even though they're largely based in Germany, they have Ukrainian roots and things like that. So Povetkin gets going to carry that nationalism as well. And being that this is Russia, they're going to have some influence in this matters as well, you know. But kind of when you hear about the amounts, it's almost like, you know, why you just go ahead and fight them? Just go ahead and fight them. Just go ahead and prove what you can do anyway. You know what I'm saying? But it's like doping is so crazy, man, because PEDs affect everyone differently, you know. Some people can have large benefits from it, and some people can just have minimalistic benefits from it, you know, despite doping and stuff like that. So, I mean, but the safety side, of course, you want to say, well, he's doping, don't take the fight. But at the same time, look at this. When they found out that Povetkin had those small amounts in the system, so we know that confirmed that he's been doping, you know, but it's a very small amount. But how or who on Wilder's team, like, you know what, we see the sample's positive, so we can back out of this fight, sue, and get paid for the fight, and still take some fights going forward. Did they say that privately instead of saying, let's just take the fight and get over with, despite the fact that it's in Russia? So, I mean, so many different angles to talk about, but the main thing that looms to me is the fact that Russia has state-sponsored doping, and like I said, which definitely can leak over in their boxes and things like that. You know, crazy.
So I think that with the way that the events unfolded, if I'm not incorrect with how I feel like I read that the events occurred, is that they found the trace amounts of, you know, the substance in his temple, and they put a postpone or a hold, or they suspended the fight or something, right? So with the information that Deontay Wilder had, I think that he made, you know, the decision based off of what he had, and then after some time, after the fight they had passed, if I'm not incorrect, then they came back and said, oh, wait a second, we suspended him or whatever, but we're taking that off because now we found that it's not that big of a deal. It was under, it was an allowable amount. But with the information that Wilder had, I think he made the decision that most people would have probably made, you know, which would be called a correct decision. I don't think, you know, he's in the wrong for backing out of a fight where he told that his opponent is getting reprimanded for taking, you know, drugs or whatever. And so now we're at the point where say that it was an allowable amount, and, you know, now the fight is not being held. So, you know, we got both sides suing each other because one side is like, you know, with the information I had, this is what, you know, I chose to do. And the other side is like, well, you know, they found me innocent, so, you know, I want my money from you. I don't think Wilder should get punished by, you know, the information that he was given at the time.
Well, I mean, and I think what that thing is reference to lawsuits between each other. I think that's what it basically all boils down to, is in reference to who's going to win the, you know, who's going to win the lawsuit, is that if all boils down to how much information did Deontay Wilder's team have when he was given the news that there was a presence of meldonium in Alexander Protection System, because that was found in April, and there's like an article, I think it's either it was like the LA Times or somewhere else, where that whole thing that where Wada was talking about how much, you know, micrograms per milliliter can be in one system, that was shown in April. And so when Povetkin's A sample came in, it came in with 70 nanograms per milliliter. And so what Wilder would have to prove is that he did not know about it being 70 nanograms per milliliter. All that he knew at that time was that a presence of meldonium was in the system, and that with the presence of meldonium in the system, that means that the fight should have been called off. If he could prove that, then he would be the one that would win the case. But if not, and Ryan Bensky and his team is able to prove that they should have had all of that information at that time, then Ryan Bensky will win. And the thing about it is that a lot of fans won't realize is that this fight was basically put up by Ryan Bensky. It wasn't put up by Lou DiBella. DiBella and his team lost the purse bid when it came to who would be able to get the fight. So the mere fact that it was at Russia in the first place is because Ryan Bensky won that purse bid. And Ryan Bensky put up the $7 million. They said it's like $7.15 million for Ryan Bensky that he won that purse bid. And so Deontay Wilder was due about $4.7 to $4.9 million. And another like $700,000 or so of it was put in escrow towards the winner of that fight. But so now with that fight being canceled, everything was basically put out on the side. So nobody really earned anything. Nobody got any money or anything like that. And so that's where that whole lawsuit between those two stems about, is that with, Povetkin basically having that presence of meldonium in the system, that made, you know, Wilder and his team react like that. So it's something that's still, you know, ongoing, because the WBC was supposed to make a ruling about what would happen with the number one contendership of Alexander Povetkin in July, and here we are in August, and they still have not, you know, made a decision as to, you know, what is happening with Alexander Povetkin. And they just released their WBC rankings, and they still have Alexander Povetkin as their number one contender.
The instant solution would be Wilder to fight Povetkin when he get healed next year. And, you know, it's delayed again, you know, that'll be the easiest solution versus having to pay people this and pay people that and just add in the extra for the people's pension and stuff.
I mean, it seems like the easy solution, too, yeah. You go ahead, Ed, on that, Terrell.
Yeah, I was going to say, I certainly agree with that. I mean, from Wilder's side, like we already talked about, he canceled the fight with Povetkin. We knew he was going to take another fight. That's where Ariola came into play. As I said, it didn't make sense for him to waste all that training time and money and things like that to prep for the Povetkin fight and just to not take a fight at all. So that's why we had the Wilder-Ariola fight. We understand that. No problem at all. this is what, August? There's still time for Wilder. Oh, actually, let me stop right there. I forgot the fact that Wilder got hurt, so it's going to be on the shelf for the rest of this year. But like Mike said, from the a fan standpoint, it's easy for him to get healed up and sign for another Povetkin fight. But at the same time, they're still going to be pursuing the lawsuit against Rubensky to try to get that money from the last fight. So if that happens, for it to be another fight, or just for them to actually, so Rubensky would have to put up more money for a second fight. So legally wise, I think some people, both sides need to drop some pride. If Wilder could agree to drop his suit, and Rubensky would agree to drop their libel suit for defamation of character, I think they could come together and get this fight done. But that's going to be real tricky. It's going to be a lot of bravado, a lot of ego involved in negotiating something like that. Because like I said, with Rubensky, he went through the same thing with their fight Lebedev, where they sued Guillermo, I forgot the guy's name, from Panama. I forgot where they sued him for testing positive after the fight. And they won their suit.
Yep, right. Guillermo Jones.
Yep. So with that right there, on Wilder's side, they're going to be like, why should we drop soup when we know what we know? And like you said, James, it's a matter of knowing when did they know what they know, and if they can prove that, and certainly if you can prove those facts, you know you have a case, you know. And why would you want to drop that? You know, like I said, so it's going to be a lot of ego be having to be pushed aside for these two guys to get in the ring. And once again, in the meanwhile, we suffer. The fans suffer. You know, so what can you do?
Yeah. So I would say if they do push the ego aside, then all Wilder has to do is just add in more extensive testing, you know, test them earlier and often and more often.
Yeah, I think they would probably have to have a continuous testing system in reference to Alexander Povetkin. And the thing that the anti-doping agency specified is that, you know, if they have a specific amount of meldonium in their system between March and October of this year, it has to be over one microgram per milliliter that they test. But if there is any trace of meldonium in their system after October 1st, then that's it. Then they're caught right then and there. So what they'll have to do is they'll have to pretty much wait it out and then see if they could test Alexander Povetkin again some point after October 1st and see if there's still a presence of meldonium in his system. And if there is, then they could, you know, discipline Povetkin in reference to that case. And if they do, then he'll be removed from his number one contendership of the WBC championship.
Yeah.
But that's going to be an interesting case there. That's going to be ongoing for the next few months or so while, you know, Deontay Wilder recovers from his injuries that he has. All right, we're pretty much like 10 minutes into overtime here, and there's one key story that, you know, I'm going to delve into, and that is in reference to the fight that's going to be happening September 10th. Between Kell Brook and Gennady Golovkin. On August 10th, was reported that the 30-day weights of Golovkin was at 165 pounds, while the 30-day weight for Kell Brook was at 176 pounds. And, of course, this is interesting for many because Kell Brook has, you know, fought for pretty much all of his career at 147 pounds. And so while he may have, you know, tried to go up to like 160 and then cut down to 147 pounds for his fight, this is probably, you know, rarefied territory that Kell Brook is over 175 pounds in the 30-day weight here before the upcoming fight against Gennady Golovkin, and it's raising some doubts as for some as to if he's going to be able to make that 160-pound limit in his fight between him and Golovkin. Of course, you know, Golovkin has been at 160 pounds his whole career, so he knows how to get in and, you know, out ideal weight before, you know, taking that or setting that down to 160 for the day of the weigh-in, which will probably be September 9th, while Kell Brook will have to shed 16 pounds, at least 16 pounds, in order to make weight on September 9th before the fight happens in England between those two. So let's start here with Mike Brady. What are you thinking about that?
I mean, I think the weights are not like there's not too much exclamation with that because people probably normally walk around 30 plus pounds over the weight classes they fight at anyway. And I mean, his frame is already like, you know, sort of big for 147, one, you know, anyway, whatever. And I don't think that speaks to too much. I guess he was trying to bulk up anyway and like work on power, but do I think it'll help and make him that much more powerful than Golovkin? Probably not. I mean, Golovkin will still be the stronger man, but I mean, that would be surprising if he did, you know, come in and could hurt and the power was comparable to a Golovkin. Then that would give us more respect for Sean Porter in his loss to him. But I don't have like any like super thoughts on this at the moment.
All right, Terrell, what you got on it?
Yeah, what's laughable about this whole build up to this fight to me? Back when this fight was first announced, it was referenced that Golovkin had a interview where he basically said that Kell Brook was too small. And now you see a total reversal on that from Triple G. And now on top of that, you see that I've been reading what seems like article after article by Kell Brook about the fact that he's the same size as Triple G, minus an inch in height. And I've been seeing so many articles about how he's just as strong as Triple G. It's almost like saying your little brother, he's not big enough to fight you now. That's what it seems like, what Brook is saying. I'm big enough to fight my older brother now. And he's trying to talk you into it. He's trying to talk me into it and trying to talk everybody else into it. This is definitely it would be quite a feat if he was the B Triple. We know that. But like I said, the main thing, he's trying to talk everybody into believing that, hey, I can do this. I'm big enough, I'm strong enough, and I'm good enough, you know. So is this so funny that, you know, like I said, from the Triple U side saying Brook was too small, now we got the fight announced, and now you got even Golovkin's side say, oh, yeah, he's just as big as me. Oh, we're about the same size. They're trying to convince us, hey, this is a legitimate fight. And we, I mean, look at our most recent example with Con Canelo moving up in class to fight a bigger guy. We saw what happened with that fight. So it's almost like, what is there to suggest that Brook can overturn his odds? We don't have a big body of work, definitely not from him, because we know his greatest fight to this day has been Sean Porter, and that was at 147. And once again with someone moving up in weight to one weight class, now let alone two, how many times have we seen people not really carry that power? We haven't seen that. A lot of times a fighter does not carry all that power they had at a lower division. You know, look at Broner. Great at 135, great at 140. 147, not so much. He didn't have that power like he was accustomed to. So we're starting to look at the same example here. So I'm really looking at this. I'm looking forward to this fight mainly to see what happens, not because I want to see Brook beat Triple D. I really want to see what happens from both sides, you know. So basically, convince me in the ring. Show me in the ring.
Yep. I mean, to me, I just, you know, was pretty surprised about Kell Brook ended up at 176 pounds. And so it's going to take, you know, a good amount of time for him to cut down to 16 pounds in order to make weight. And I think he pretty much may have went about it the wrong way. And so now he's going to have to shed those extra pounds or either change his diet up or have to, you know, increase his activity as far as exercise is concerned in order for him to make weight. And that may end up being that will end up being a disadvantage for him in that case. I would like to see, like, how he's able to move around in the ring with that extra weight that's going to be on him, because not only is he going to have to make that 160-pound weight on September 9th, but you got to see, like, what he's going to be able to do in order to get all of those, you know, calories back into him that he lost by trying to make weight. Because once usually once he will be able to lose all those calories and all that weight, he will want to at least try to gain some of that back so that at least he'll have some type of energy, because it'll still feel like he's drained himself down in order to make weight. And so he'll need something in order to get him back up in order to, at least have some type of energy for those first few rounds of the fight. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he's going to come out there in those first few rounds against Gennady Golovkin after losing, 16 pounds in 30 days.
I don't think 16 pounds is necessarily that much to lose in 30 days.
Well, it's a matter of how you lose that weight. It's a matter of how you lose it. Either gradually, or are you shocking? Because if you lose it too fast, you're going to shock your body. And what I mean by that, you can actually shock your kidneys and your liver into performing less at their normal functions and everything. And from that point, if your kidney function or your liver function is not at an optimal level, you're not going to perform right. You're going to be sluggish. Your body's not circulating and processing everything in a normal fashion, at an optimal fashion. So it's about how you lose that weight.
Yep. Exactly. And so, you know, I just think it'll be a clear advantage for Gennady Golovkin when they match against each other in the ring on September 10th. And the other thing is that the other notable thing that I noticed in some news publications is that, you know, after Brook finishes this fight, 160 pounds, he'll probably stick around to being at 164 pounds. So he may end up giving up that IBF welterweight belt that, you know, we were, that I was mentioning earlier in the show, that Errol Spence was going after.
Which is a good idea. Because if he beats Golovkin, he shouldn't fight. I wouldn't dare fight Errol Spence. It's like not enough risk and reward for fighting Errol Spence if he happens to beat Golovkin.
Even if he lost to Golovkin, it would still be a big risk and little reward.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but I mean, how many times have we seen? Well, I mean, not a lot of times, but I say, but certain people where they allowed you to keep a belt while you fight for another belt. I mean, like Mayweather, I think he had a belt at 47, and they let him fight for the one at 54. You know, stuff like that. So, would they allow that? Possibly, but like I said, just we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. I was just seeing here if there was one more little tidbit that I could get into before the end of the show. And I see that there was, you know, news, also other news in the middleweight division. And this goes to, you know, somebody who, you know, I'm kind of now viewing as the biggest loser in the year 2016 so far. And his name is Billy Joe Saunders. And if you've been on the YouTube boxing circuit over the past year or so, you know that some user with the name of 78 Sports TV called him Billy Ho Saunders. And not only that, now you've got Dan Raphael going hard at Billy Joe Saunders now because it seems like, I'm getting here from Steve Kim out of BoxingScene.com that Saunders turns down the fight between him and Gabriel Rosado for the WBO middleweight championship there. The plan was to have Billy Joe Saunders fight Gabriel Rosado as a co-feature to the event between Canelo and Liam Smith. Since the thing with Luis Ortiz and Usmanov fell through because of Ortiz's promotional dealings with Golden Boy Promotions, so they tried to have a alternative. And Eric Gomez wanted to put in Billy Joe Saunders against Gabriel Rosado, and Saunders basically turned that down. This is one of multiple fights that I think that Billy Joe Saunders has turned down this year. I think he may have had an offer to fight a couple of other guys like Willie Monroe Jr. and I think either Curtis Stevens or I think it was Curtis Stevens or somebody else in reference to who Saunders was going to fight as part of the undercard. But he turned down all three of those fights. And he's still, in hearing this report, he's still hopeful that he may fight Canelo Alvarez in December. But seems like Gomez here in this report says that he was told that Saunders will be fighting back in the UK, but they really don't necessarily have, you know, anything set in stone in reference to that. So here we are, Billy Joe Saunders, WBO middleweight champion without a fight.
Yeah, I read the article too, and from the Rosado side, and this is a chance for Saunders to come stateside, get some stateside exposure, which we know a lot of fighters have that desire to come over here to sit on this side and get exposure, get onto a bigger audience to showcase their skill set. And we all know Rosado's story pretty well. I mean, this is a guy with 9 losses. But at the same time, just because he has 9 losses is not totally suggestive of who Gabriel Rosado is. But he's a known opponent. He's a name. He has durability on top of that. So, you know, you can at least get some rounds in. And you're not necessarily just going to knock him out or knock him down. That's not really going to happen. I never heard that reference to Billy Ho's song. That's pretty funny and everything. But it's like, what is this guy scared of? And like I said, he won his belt last year beating Andy Lee. So what have you done since then? You know, you're not taking out any domestic challenge. So what's next for you? And why would you not want to come over here, get on a major card, get that exposure? I mean, people, we know his name, but once again, what have you done lately? You know, so it's a pretty bad move on his part to not take the fight. And Rosado basically said he thought the fight was supposed to be signed. Now suddenly he's been informed that it's not going to happen. So it's sad for him as well, be jerked around like that.
I think Rosado is a risk, though. You know, a risk that Billy Joe Saunders, you know, probably want to take. Because Rosado definitely wants himself a belt, and that's probably his best route to get a belt is to fight Billy Joe Saunders.
So he's in the long run.
Maybe it's a smart move in the long run.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Rosado's durable. He's a good puncher, you know, and has a good chin and stuff like that. So it's definitely a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, look at who was it that actually when at one point in time Triple G targeted him, and you already know they said, you know, we can pretty much easily take this guy and everything. And that's where they try to lowball him on offer to get him to fight so he can grab that belt. And Saunders, kind of smartly, he said, nope, I need more money than that. Either give me more money or the fight's not going to happen, you know. So Saunders has already been targeted as a weaker champion and everything. And for him to turn on this Rosado fight certainly adds on to that fuel to the fire. Like, you know, dude, what are you doing? You're a champion. What are you doing? Who are you fighting? And you turn on a Rosado with 9 losses? Come on now.
But
yeah,
who his 9 losses are too, though. He lost to some pretty you know, stout people. He ain't lose to no chumps, I don't think.
Including Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, including Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, and the thing with that one was that Rosado ended up moving up to fight Gennady Golovkin there. He was at 150, I think he was at 154 pounds before, you know, that fight took place. And then there, he actually wanted to fight Golovkin at the full 160-pound limit there. So he took that fight. He also had a no decision against Jaylen Love. And, yeah, he had tough losses, man, to guys that won belts, basically. Peter Quillen, Jermell Charlo, David Lemieux. Who else he had? Alfredo Angulo was another loss that he had, too. So, he's had, like, you know, he's fought a who's who. In the course of, you know, notable fighters and known fighters, so... for Billy Joe Saunders to turn down a fight like that, where he could have, you know, still had, he would have been able to score the win, and if he scored the win, then he would have a definite payday against Canelo Alvarez before the end of 2016. So now he may just end up not fighting anybody this year and not getting anything out of it. So, you know, that's pretty much my take on that with Billy Joe Saunders. And I just feel like he won't be able to end up fighting anybody in the course of this year. You know, with that being said, I think that'll, you know, kind of like close things out here for this week's show. By the time we get on next week at 7:30, it'll be the end of that fight between Errol Spence Jr. and Lennon Bundu. So we'll pretty much see if we could go over that next week. Just be sure to catch the sister shows on the MRN Broadcasting Channel. You have the Cold Hard Truth on Sports on Tuesday nights at 8:30. And I'm going to see if we'll probably get the CMT Fire Song Football Talk Show started up on Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. And like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is a hit and I get hit. Not the same in trade. On that note, I'm out.
Later.